freaking auto!
This is Brock and Salk.
I don't read the internet, guys.
Presented by Carter, Volkswagen, and Ballard.
Take the bull by the hands.
On Seattle's Sports Station.
And Brook Wire, you are. And Brook, you are.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Now here are your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
Put the fire!
Yeah, all kinds of fire for sure. It's Brock and Salk, Seattle Sports 710, SeattleSports.com, Seattle Sports app. And Brock, did the officials blow the day yesterday? Was yesterday all about the officiating?
Game two was they pushed that line as far as they could.
Think so?
And, well, when Miss Molly, it was a fun football day in the Huard family. We all just, well, maybe it was, Macy was babysitting quite a bit, but Titus and Molly and I just hunkered down watching most of the games. And
I mean, the first game was terrible.
That was pretty bad.
I mean, it's terrible. And it's I mean, it's just such a bummer to have to see it like that. Like,
correct.
It could have been a great game, and instead it was terrible.
Yes, totally agree with that. Yet there were enough wacky things, and you're like, oh my gosh, who's going to play quarterback? And
right.
Have you ever seen this before? And, you know, Molly hit the wire, and there's just kind of enough wackadoo stuff that Molly's like, have you ever called a game where multiple quarterbacks have been knocked out? Have you ever seen anything like this? So at least it had some level of intrigue through 2.5 quarters before it was just a total zero. The second game, when Miss Molly's like, this is, can you imagine being a Cincinnati fan? I was like, oh,
no.
Yeah, my buddy, poor Justin. You know, and every time she said it, I'm like, all I'm picturing is just Justin in his, you know, sleeping bag watching that game and everything else, wearing his orange. Like, can you imagine? Like, that's where that game started to stretch into that zone. Like, if that was the Seahawks playing, I'd be like, livid. I would just be livid. Do I think it ultimately cost them the game?
Which part would have made you livid?
Oh, especially the redo of third down.
I mean, they got it right.
The guy starts to run in, and then he like backs out. Just blow the play dead. Just come in,
right.
What's his name? Bogar? Is that the white hat? The referee?
It's Torber.
Torber. Sorry.
And well, no clue, that guy. I mean, that's the biggest problem I think they had is that Torber has no command of the game.
There you go.
He's not a commanding presence. People can make fun of Ed Hockley and Gene Steratore and all those guys and being, you know, fake tough guys and, you know, working out and all that. I understand why they were made fun of, but I do think that there is some element of having control and command of the game.
Even your little buddy, little Hockey Lake,
he's
got control.
Hawk does. Hawk knows what he's doing. Pitzer guy, played a, you know, Sage Hen. Of course. Yes. No, you have
no,
to have
but you
some...
do feel a command. You do feel it.
And
whether
Torber,
it's an umpire.
Even though they got a lot of it right, because they had to, they needed to do it again. The clock was screwed up. The play was sort of blown dead, and it was a big mess.
Yes.
But because he's got no command, it looks bad.
Correct. Yeah, I think you said that in the note to us last night, and I think you nailed that. And that's what that position is, man. The guy with the microphone and the camera on him, you've got to be in control.
Yeah.
You know, it is that old
U571
with Sean McDonough.
Sean McDonough, yes. He was great in Sean, U571.
Stop it. McDonaghy, whatever his name is.
Matthew McConaughey?
There you go. And the captain says to him, like, hey, man. Like, you can't, or one of the electricians or the lead guys downstairs, like, hey, man, you can't ever show that you don't know what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's okay, maybe in the quietness of your soul, to say, I don't know if I got that right, or question some things, but not to any of us on this boat. You're in charge. And yeah, you could just feel him on multiple occasions. Now, you have to call that penalty at the end.
You have to.
I mean, you have to. I got a quick little story on Joseph Asai. You want it real quick?
Yeah.
He's the pass rusher that ended up chasing that play down and hit Mahomes.
He's the former Bengals outside linebacker.
Could be. I loved him in the draft. I think he fell kind of third round-ish because he was just a little bit of a tweener, right? Not your big enough to play end, not your typical outside linebacker. But I had a Texas game, and I just loved him because he's absolutely relentless, never, ever stopped. And their D coordinator said, yeah, he broke our catapult record. And I was like, well, what exactly is that? Well, that's the mechanism they wear for every practice that measures the distance run, the amount of output, the acceleration, the amount of energy. He said usually like receivers are in the 300s. Like he had a practice where he was in the 500s. Like it's just unheard of. You just don't see that kind of effort. And when you see him playing that hard, that long, and then he just makes that critical mistake that he's going to have to live with, unfortunately, for the rest of his life. You know, getting that moment, and that's part of being in the arena.
And I don't believe that the – I mean, look, in general, I think that you do want to kind of let guys play and let the play on the field sort it out at the ends of games, right? I mean, in general, I would like to see that in football. Fewer yep. pass interference calls that are game-changing plays, et cetera.
A taunting call. Who cares?
Right, I know. Like, it's some, but – you hit a quarterback 2 feet out of bounds like that, they're going to call that every single time. And they need to. And good point by our own Mike Lefko. Like, you want to know why they needed to call that? Because the game won. Because they need to protect the quarterbacks, especially. I mean, I know this is an out of bounds rather than a late hit on a quarterback, you know, in the pocket, but you can't. You don't want to end up with Chad Henne playing in a playoff game, or in this case, what we saw yesterday, two quarterbacks couldn't throw the ball.
Yeah, oh, that was first one was a little rough. So yeah, it didn't take away from the day for me. I still thought it was tremendous football. I thought it was very entertaining. Mm-hmm. I think the NFL just has storylines galore, and they just continue to get pulled out. I think the mayor of Cincinnati will probably be fired. he probably don't need to add any extra fuel, you know, to that rivalry. Whereas this day and whereas that day, don't ever whereas anything when it comes to the rivalry.
What do you make of Travis Kelce?
I appreciate you. How about this beautiful trophy? Huh? Hey, I got some wise words for that Cincinnati mayor. Know your role and shut your mouth, you jabroni. You gotta fight for your right to party.
That dude's an unbelievable football player. That's what I know about him first. Like, he's going to go down as one of the greatest tight ends. And if he keeps doing this another 3 or 4 years with this guy, he'll go down as the greatest, you know, certainly the greatest pass-catching tight end, bar none. Tony Gonzalez, him, pretty short list. Guy in San Diego for 18 years. How would you feel
if your teammate did that after the game?
Oh, you need that character on your team.
No, you don't.
Yes, you do.
No, you don't.
You need that little flavor on your team.
Flavor,
you want
yes.
that little flavor on your team.
Did you hate Gronk?
No, but he's wannabe Gronk. He's like wannabe Gronk. Like, to me, Gronk, that feels so
he's sustained it
so
for a
absurd.
Long time. Oh. He's been this personality. He and his brother have kind of been able to sustain this. This isn't a like Ocho Cinco where
he
each
just
year,
yelled, "You've got to fight for your right to party," in all seriousness. Like, I don't think I've ever heard a person do that.
Because, well, he gets after it. I mean, he and his brother don't mind doing that. So, he doesn't bother me as much as he bothers you and Justin, if I'm just being totally honest. Like, because it feels somewhat genuine. Thank you, Moore, because it's not been just like this one-trick pony. It's not been, well, I'm going to build this, you know, fake Gronk stuff and try to pull it off. Like, he's been doing this for a bunch of years, and it's just kind
of... Him and Kittle, honestly, both of them, I can't stand either one of them. Just
and Kittle plays for my least favorite team, and I can say he's fine. I
really?
Cannot stand Kelce.
I can't stand. I cannot stand Kittle.
You don't like fun. Huh? No, you don't like fun. You just don't like fun.
I don't like look at me guys. They're just look at me guys. Look at me. Look at me. Look at me. Constantly, both of them. Yeah, you know what? Gronk was the same way. They're look at me guys. I don't
but their
really
teammates
like
love
either.
Them. But their teammates love
they're
them.
Look at me. Stop being look at me. Look at everybody else. Look at me. Look at me. Look at me.
This is your Kevin Youkilis. This is your Kevin Youkilis coming out. You don't like it. You don't like him smashing his helmet and breaking his bat. This is your baseball.
I don't like any of it.
No, you don't.
They're look at me guys.
You're Dr. No Fun.
I'm not Dr. I like fun. I don't like look
Dr.
at me.
Dr. Feel Bad.
Yeah.
There's moments to look at you, right? Like, I like Joe Horn kind of being creative and taking the Sharpie out. Out and the celebration. That stuff's fine.
T.O.
That's part
like
of the game.
T.O. was an N.O.G.
I'm glad you're here, Brock. I told them they're just being haters.
I don't feel like I'm being a hater.
Tony Romo, Travis Kelce, George Kittle. I hate them. Hate them all.
This is big, Maura. This is big. Here we go.
This is a huge moment.
All right, Maura, this is big. So I'll tell you what happened here. It's third down. Now you can see the officials come. No, look on the other side. No, it's the other official because he's running in because he knows it's third down.
Oh, wait. Who else
but then
do you
guess,
hate?
Hold on a minute.
Greg Olsen.
Because
you hate Greg Olsen,
but
too.
But then you got to understand that over here, the quarterback is trying to call play. But if you looked at Jim, hold on a second. I might have gotten this wrong because if you look at this other angle, it's going to show it's a little bit different. Now, hold on a second. No, that's not right. Well,
okay.
Are you done? Are you done?
It's like listening to somebody give you directions to get to the airport from Saskatchewan. Like, here's what you're going to do. You're going to go down to the end of the road, and when you get to the light, well, it's a blinking, well, it's kind of like a light, but it's also, it's blinking, but hold on, because some days it's actually, like, solid, but if you get there in the middle of the night, it's going to be blinking, so it depends what time, but hold on, because that light's now a stop sign. Like, shut up. I have PTSS, PTSD. Stop talking. All right. Anyway.
Is that all you got?
I think so. Okay, let's give you everything you need to know next. It's Brock and Salk, Sales Sports on 710.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Brock and Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Well, I don't think Seahawks fans are going to shed any tears for the Niners, but as a football fan, we kind of were deprived yesterday. That just wasn't right. That's not the way I wanted to see that game go down, with the not having a quarterback capable of throwing a forward pass in the fourth quarter. That's not NFL football in this day and age. So that was kind of a big, big bummer. But yeah, George Kittle, he was very clear. Brock, he wanted you to know how upset he was. So he cursed, just to show you.
How's that feel to lose an NFC Championship game because I don't have a quarterback? Pretty to be honest.
That's right.
Yeah, about it.
Yeah, you can tell him, Matt. It's cursing public. That's right. I would have preferred to actually see those guys try to throw the ball, McCaffrey or Juszczyk or whatever, and run some sort of wildcat, but you can't plan for that in the moment. Like, there's just nothing really out there for them to do. So, bummer that we have to watch that. But congratulations to the Eagles. Not their fault that the other team didn't have a quarterback or a third quarterback. I mean, they knocked those guys out with their ability to get to the passer. They were tremendous. Complete team. Jalen Hurts is one of my favorite players in this league. They're built around him just perfectly. They were physical. They were fast. Hassan Reddick is a difference maker. That guy's never missed a game in his career and was available the last 2 years in free agency. So, yeah, I would say the Eagles are Super Bowl favorites now heading into the game in 2 weeks.
Well, that line has bounced all over the place, kind of with Kansas City's injuries over the course of that game. And I think it started out with Kansas City favored and then Philly favored, then Kansas City even, then a pick'em. And I think it's kind of settled in now as Philly about a 2-point favorite. Mike, and just reading through some of the extraordinary numbers of Philadelphia, you referenced a bunch of their difference makers, but as a team, as a defensive line unit, a 54% pass rush win rate as a group.
Wow.
I mean, and that's why their sack numbers were just head and shoulders above anybody else. And people will say, how in the world do you leave Hassan Reddick on a backup tight end? Because you can't block them all, because they don't have one or two or three. You know, they go eight deep like your old Seahawks did. And as I was watching that game, the words of John Schneider with Wyman and Bob last week were just resonating. You know, Schneider said San Francisco's the model. They're bigger, they're faster, they're stronger. Well, if they're bigger and faster and stronger, then what in the world is that Goliath that's representing the NFC in Arizona against Kansas City? Because those two, that's where the road's going to now go through for some time.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Well, on the AFC side of things, you can say what you want about the Chiefs and how that game ended, but they do play close and fun AFC championship games. That is for sure. This time they got a bit of a break. Joseph Asai hitting Mahomes out of bounds, which set up a 45-yard field goal. Would have been 60, right? And instead it's 45 because of this.
But you still got a chance to clock it. Take your time and take the shot down. Here's Mahomes rolling out on third and four. He's going to go for the ash. He's got the marker. He's got the out of bounds to stop it. And Osai was hurt as he hit the bench. And a flag's coming in.
Well, the flag did need to come in because he hit him fully out of bounds. But that's how the cookie crumbles, unfortunately, for Cincinnati fans. I thought it was interesting. You had the two best quarterbacks in the game, arguably, playing in that game. Both of them blowing chances to win in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, both of them had no run game to support it. And unlike Cincy going to Buffalo the week before and able to just gash the Bills in that run game, once again, you talk about defensive line. And you have made this point, I think, all season long. It was a point in many of our conversations with KJ of just how dependent others are on that group up front. And when you've got some of the most dominant, difficult to block, go through double teams, and Chris Jones yesterday just took over that game. And since he couldn't run it, Burrow was sacked again a multitude of times. And those are two special players. They both made throws time and again during that during that game, that turned to Titus and said, that's why these are two of the best on planet Earth right now, doing what they were doing. But with a very little supporting cast for Kansas City, some struggles up front with Cincinnati, they're going to kick themselves, man. Two drives to go win it. Joe Burrow walked over to his lineman. You saw that. What a great shot they showed. And you could see him say, we got two more possessions. They got two more possessions. They just got nothing out.
Yeah, didn't do anything with them. It's interesting, though. Both those guys, as great as their arms are, seem to do something with their legs once or twice a game to matter. And Burrow did it once on a key third down. And then, obviously, what Mahomes did to set up that final field goal. It's cool watching both of them. Two really good players. But, yeah, interesting. They weren't really able to get it done on the clutch.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Well, good for the Kraken. They needed a little bounce back, and they got it on Saturday. And so they'll go into the All-Star break with the solo lead in the Pacific. They split the weekends back-to-backs. They were ugly on Friday. We were there. It was not pretty. Just no energy, no effort, no nothing. Just sort of discombobulated blah is a great word for playing their first game without Matty Beniers. It was helpful to have Columbus in the next day because they're not very good at all.
McCann, Eberle, out in front. Lincoln shuts the door. Dunn and McCann jamming. Eberle out in front. There's Wedberg. There's a goal. In game number 600, Alex Wedberg against his former team.
There's a heck of a pass from Jordan Eberle. Sets up that was the second goal of the game. They win it 3-1. I'll tell you what, though. Seeing Beniers not out there for two games, it's a good thing they got the All-Star break here.
Yep.
Just seeing your player out as the result of a dirty hit, it's not right, man.
Been any update on that?
Nope.
In hockey, doesn't do a lot of that, right? Upper body injury, lower body injury, whatever it may be. But, yeah, good timing, I think, for this team and in a position that, you know, they've certainly not been in, surpassed their win total earlier last week. And, Mike, as they sit atop the Pacific Division, they still are a game or two less than their peers around them. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, what a first half. As you bank that first half, as you go in the All-Star game, I'm sure we will do some of that this week. And looking back at in a first half that none of us, you know, none of us saw coming. Kind of like the Seahawks, kind of like Julio Rodriguez. Been a year, 2022, and into even now 2023, that so many of us pleasantly surprised by individuals, or in this case, a group that is, boy, they put together one heck of a first half.
All right, that is everything you need to know. Quarter past every hour here on the new Brock and Salk show. Let's see some texts. Harrison Spokane says, if I took a shot every time Greg Olson said activate, I would have been Hope Solo wasted by the end of the day. Wow, that's pretty funny. Finally, Salk, we agree on something. Romo is clown shoes. Romo never shuts up. I think he's paid by the word. Can you send out a mass text when Salk is finished? I think everyone turned off their radio. All right. Well,
I missed, actually, this weekend? And I know he passed away last year, and there's been a lot of reminiscing about John Madden. You are reminded how amazing John Madden was.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, for so many years on those stages and in those moments, it became such a star. I mean, he was a star, yet he handled the job like it isn't about me, right? He still showered it on everybody else. And, yeah, he was a remarkable talent. Pat Summerall was a man of few words. Madden, equally, you know, he didn't have to fill it up from beginning to end and talk incessantly and just talk to talk. And he had just an amazing, amazing presence to him.
Well, yeah, Madden found a way to bring humor and personality to it without making it about him. And, you know, I think Phil Sims and Troy Aikman and some of those guys have just done a good job of just kind of watching the game with you so that they're not the story. They're just there.
Yeah.
The problem with Romo is he feels like he's trying to be the story. And then for us, look, if you don't like me, you don't have to listen. You can go do any number of other things.
Please don't do that. Keep listening.
But, like, it's part of your...
Moore is here and Justin's here. I'm sorry.
If you don't like Tony Romo, but you want to watch the AFC Championship game, tough. Like, that's your option. There are no other options, so...
You can listen to the international feed.
How is that? I heard a little bit about that last week from Kevin Burkhardt. He tells me that it's good, but that it's a little bit pared down. I don't know. Maybe I need a little more action than that. What did we learn this weekend? Quite a bit, as it turns out. We'll dig into it together next. Brock and Salk, Seattle Sports on 710, seattlesports.com.
You're listening to Brock and Salk,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio
on Seattle Sports Station.
Did you learn anything this weekend watching those games, Brock? I think I did. I felt like I came away from it with a little bit more knowledge, and maybe it's not particularly helpful, but you know, we spend all this time talking about quarterbacks. And do you need to have a great quarterback to win? Or is it a great roster to win? Or is it your coaching that wins? Or, you know, is it about the officiating? Or do you need a defensive line, this, that, and the other? What's the most important way and the best way to build a team? And I think the truth is, and watching the Eagles and the Chiefs especially, maybe it's just you got to have a complete team that's well-coached. And you got to have a little fortune go your way as well if you want to get all the way to the end. That's the reality of life in an NFL where all of these teams are at least pretty good.
Yep.
Right? I mean, you got to have a little luck go your way.
Two home teams, two number one seeds, both make it. I think the two youngest quarterbacks still. I mean, Mahomes still a young guy. It's kind of remarkable. He's been around this league, it feels like, forever. His third Super Bowl appearance and, what was that, his fifth straight AFC Championship game appearance. But they still will be two of the combined youngest quarterbacks to ever start Super Bowls in 13 days.
It's the first matchup of black quarterbacks in NFL history in the Super Bowl. That's kind of surprised me. I guess I hadn't thought about that. I mean, at some point you've had enough black quarterbacks win the Super Bowl that I'm not thinking that way. But that's kind of a cool idea that for the first time ever, both quarterbacks will be blacks. That's just an interesting side note to it.
They both got to play one less game when you're the number one seed. Yep. And that's going to matter. And I think just moving forward in this league, it used to be two, you know, that kind of, I don't know if it leveled the playing field or what have you, but it will be interesting to watch over the years how many of these number one seeds do make it, because this line, as you said, in the NFL, man, it takes a little bit of fortune and to just not have to play 60 minutes and then to not put my guys through 60 minutes of violence. The hitting yesterday, and I don't think it was just the parabola mics were turned up on the sidelines, but the amount of just crunch. What was that NFL crunch?
NFL crunch, course.
Oh, you love that.
I do love that.
That was on your boombox with your Anthrax.
Like boombox?
And your Metallica. Yes.
It's a VHS.
You converted
video,
it to tape.
I wish.
Your dad did.
This is the NFL's crunch course.
Yeah. Bro, there were so many just, oh. And you hear those as fans. I'm just telling you, if you were on the sideline watching that, I remember as I started to do preseason games and just being down on the field pregame, feeling some of these guys like run by you, like, oh, gosh, or listening to some of these collisions at field level. You just take it for granted. Like, yeah, they're just out there playing, man. The Warriors, what they do. It's the NFL. He's the best. But when you get, that's what I learned, is just, it does crank up.
Of course.
And it cranks up to, there's not a time where, as KJ Wright said, like, yeah, I'll go into this. I'll go into this pile. I'll still go into it. But I'm not going into it as a 10 if the season's over and I got to protect my health. No, that wasn't the case yesterday, man. It was 10 after 10 after 10. Full speed
and getting
collisions.
To skip one of those weeks certainly is helpful.
A pro football field is a crunch course that is filled with danger zones.
So good.
So good.
Love that. Some other things I learned this weekend, Brock, and maybe I think you'll agree with some of these. You better still be able to run the ball. I mean, watching the Eagles and what they do, I mean, they didn't throw for a single touchdown in the game. What did he throw for, 121 yards or something like that overall? And yet they ran the ball so well, their defense played so well that he didn't need to do more. Jalen Hurts can throw for more than 120 yards in a game.
Yes.
He is perfectly capable of throwing the ball down the field, and he's got the receivers to do it. But they run the ball, and when they run it effectively, you don't need to throw the ball that much.
I don't think he completed one intermediate pass. He threw three, four go routes that give a lot of credit to San Fran and their corners, made plays on one-on-ones. A couple of them sailed, a couple more well thrown, got knocked down by Ward.
Yep.
So he threw like three or four shots, and then it was checkdowns or just little hitches. And I mean, it was all within either the first 5 yards or we're going to take shots. There was nothing in the intermediate game whatsoever.
Important intermediate game that a few years ago, Pete Carroll's an idiot and an old man and a dinosaur because the intermediate game is the only way to win in the NFL.
Right.
Well,
Nope.
There's plenty of ways to win in the NFL. You just have to really be good at what it is you want to do.
Yep.
And the Eagles, that's been the problem with the Seahawks the last few years. They haven't been good enough at what they want to do.
When was the last time, and what a shot it was, right? We can have a little fun with these broadcasts and everything else, but what a picture it was to have that sky cam right over that rugby pile on those QB sneaks and to look at those guys, Landon Dickerson, right, and Kelsey and Jason Kelsey, and to look at those Eagles linemen literally eating grass. like Nebuchadnezzar. I mean, they were just getting down into the nitty gritty there, and who could get underneath the other one? And then the other side, right? They're putting their helmet in the, I mean, they were just digging. I could picture Jim Burt and Leonard Marshall and those guys in the 80s and 90s, like the throw that there was just some throwback trench warfare that just any football fan of any era would appreciate it. I mean, straight rugby scrum. That QB sneak.
Yeah, they just pushed him. Kept pushing.
How do you stop it?
Right.
I mean, how do you? What were they? 29-32. I know they stopped him one time, and then well, they come just right back it to again. It. Yeah. Let's just go back to it. Just amazing, fun.
Brock Purdy's an NFL starter, right? I mean, you can't come out of that game and not come back and say, man, with Brock Purdy, they were a whole lot better than they were with Josh Johnson. And certainly when Purdy couldn't throw at the end, I mean, forget it. That's not even real football. But anybody who thinks, well, you know, you just throw anybody into that offense and they'll instantly have success. No, Brock Purdy was a lot more successful than Josh Johnson was. It wasn't close.
Well, Gardner Minshew started two games for the Eagles, and you saw that as well.
Yeah, it didn't go that well.
No, it did not. So, it takes that leader. It takes
Purdy
that
their
captain.
Starter next year?
Let's see what this elbow MRI comes out
today. Let's assume he's healthy. Is Brock Purdy your starter next year? Are you getting rid of your other two guys?
Yeah, you're getting
you're
rid of.
You're going to trade Trey Lance.
Yeah, you're going to get Jimmy Garoppolo is going to move on. Josh Johnson's probably done after 14 teams in the NFL. Bless his heart.
Yes.
That was a bless his heart game yesterday.
It was, yes.
Can't look at the play clock. Can't feel the snap. Like, whew, that was really rough.
Tough to watch.
And then Trey Lance. Is there going to be a market for Trey Lance? Or, you know, you have him in year three under control and everything else. And I think that there's a lot of similarity, Jalen Hurts, Trey Lance. That's why they went up in the draft and got him. Shanahan knows the impact that threat can have in a run game, in an RPO game, and can he, you know, kind of develop a little bit. So I'm not ready for them.
I don't think they trade Trey Lance, by
the way. I don't think you get the value back.
I'm not saying that he starts next year. I mean, he may just be their backup quarterback, and we'll see what happens because injuries happen. But it's interesting that you can get guys like Hassan Reddick in free agency. Like that guy was just available.
Was he a one-year deal?
He was a one-year deal in Carolina last year. I don't know what he signed in Philly. You have to go check. I'm not sure about that. But he was with Arizona for all those years. Yep. He's never missed an NFL game. He has played in every game he's ever been eligible for. He then went to Carolina for 1 year as a free agent and now to Philly as a free agent.
Yep.
Difference maker. Now, is he being used a little bit differently in Philly than he was? He's being used more as a rush guy more than a linebacker, right?
Yeah, he was more of a linebacker in Arizona's scheme, and they're just kind of blitz fest and had to play a little bit more linebacker, and I think had one offer out of high school to Temple. I saw him in college a few times and thought, this dude's a dynamic guy, but he's one of those, well, where does he fit? You know, he's kind of doesn't fit in some of these NFL little silos. I'm shocked that, the Patriots, you know, A, didn't draft him, didn't sign him twice, because he would be a Patriot edge rusher getting you, well, like he did in Philly this year, like 15 sacks. So they finally just put him in a position on the edge and create kind of that Leo spot, and you're just going to rush, and you're going to be a monster, and you're going to just decimate backup tight ends. They're going to try to block you and just about anybody else on the field. So, yeah, you can find Cincinnati, Mike, and that defense has found difference makers through free agency. Philadelphia has found differences. Javon Hargraves was a free agent from Pittsburgh. Hassan Reddick was a free agent from Carolina. You can find defensive difference makers, and boy, do these Seahawks need to do that.
They sure do. That's 100%. Well, speaking of that defensive line, it's clearly the most important part of a defense. I've spent a lot of time thinking, just trying to figure out how the Seahawks are going to get back to being a dominant defense. And ultimately, what I think I come down on is defensive line is the most important part of the defense as long as you don't have an obvious weak link elsewhere.
Yeah.
I don't think your linebackers need to be the best in the league for you to have a great defense. Mm-hmm. I don't know that your secondary needs to be the most talented in the league for you to have a great defense. But if you do have an A-plus defensive line that can both stop the run and get after the quarterback on the edge, as long as you don't have weak links in those other positions, you should be okay. Does that make sense?
Yeah, let's see. I'm going back to the 80s here. I'm doing a little historical run on for you.
Okay.
The 80s Seahawks. Yeah, they had Kurt Warner and Dave Craig and Steve Largent. But they had some dominant dudes on their defensive line, and Joe Nash in the middle, and Jacob Green on the edges, and some of the best Seahawks teams, certainly before Pete Carroll came to town. Those 80s Seahawks were pretty amazing. The 90s Huskies that won a national title, Steve Entman, swallowed three guys. Like, if you thought Chris Jones was good last night, those Husky fans listening right now, and you know, those that know football, remember Steve Entman literally like swallowing the whole interior of offensive lines and just setting the table. The Teen Hawks, we know that, and we've talked about them a ton, right? In the biggest moves they made in that 2012 free agency, the additions of Bennett, the additions of Averill, to Clemens, and all the rest of the crew. And let's also remember the 2016 Huskies that made it to a national semifinal,
right,
and actually played with Bama. I mean, they were not so physically overwhelmed, and certainly their defense was not until they wore down in the fourth quarter, and that was Greg Gaines, that was Vita Vea, that was Elijah Qualls. That was the best group that they have had since the Steve Entman year. So, yes, we have seen through four decades some of the best football teams in this market at every level. You got difference makers up front. It sets the table for everybody else.
But you can't have weak links elsewhere. Like, if you've got one of those great defense, great defensive lines, but your secondary stinks, or you've got a Therald Simon out there just can't play, or Stephen Terrell in your defense who just, you know, unfortunately gives up big plays, that will kill you.
Yep.
But I don't know that you need to have stars everywhere else around your defense.
Agreed.
Because if your defensive line is good enough and your players in the secondary or linebacker are solid, they should be elevated to a point of becoming star-like.
Yep. And Philly and San Fran are amazing teams running the football. Their scheme is amazing for Philly. All their RPO game. I thought Greg Olsen and crew did a good job of showing that, how Fred Warner had to, you know, you just kind of neuter him, right? He just has to kind of stand still and not overreact, or they throw it right behind his ear. And San Fran's run scheme is so diverse, and they do so many things so well formationally.
Their run scheme was so good, they were almost able to have success with it without being able to throw.
Without even the threat,
right?
Yes, of any passing game. And yet, both of those defenses, Mike, yesterday, looked nothing like the Seahawks defense this year.
Nothing.
And then certainly Kansas City and Cincinnati, stopping the run, looked nothing. Like, it just was such a sieve this year. Like, if you held a run to 4 yards, you're like, oh, whew, thank goodness, right? Like, that's good run defense.
There were times where if you held it to 12 yards, you felt like you had really accomplished something.
Yeah, a lot of work to do. But opportunity. I mean, a lot of work to do, but the difference, unlike some of these jobs that are not being filled around the NFL, we have Senior Bowl week going on this week. We have four NFL vacancies still. Now, those should be filled today or tomorrow, some of those. But, you know, unlike some of those places that are cap-strapped, some of those places that are strapped with their quarterbacks, you're not. You have full flexibility and a lot of freedom here and a lot of draft capital to make some significant changes.
I guess what I would say, though, is I don't know how significant the rest of your defensive changes need to be. Does anyone think that their secondary is not capable? That's why this idea, find a corner, this and that, like, no thanks.
No.
If you fix the defensive line, your secondary is fine. Your linebackers, well, in their scheme, the outside linebackers need to rush. I think Jordan Brooks is perfectly capable.
Yep.
And I'm not convinced that Cody Barton wouldn't be okay in a system in which he had much better defensive linemen ahead of him. Okay, well, whatever. Maybe there's one that you need to replace. But you don't need to make wholesale changes throughout the backside of your defense.
Nope.
You need to fix your defensive line. Maybe you need to add one inside linebacker. And if I've got all the rest of those resources, you know where they're going to go? Explosive weaponry and some guys up front on offense, rather than trying to fix the entirety of this defense, just concentrate it on the defensive line.
Yeah, and you know, you always got to be careful, whether it's in media, whether it's in business, whether it's the NFL business, you got to be careful about always counter-programming. I think you really do. I think we learned that lesson in that building you're sitting in right there 14 years ago. Like, we're so focused on what everybody else. But I think in this case, it's a little different animal. When you know San Fran and Philly are run the way they're run, right? John Lynch isn't going anywhere. Hi, Roseman, executive of the year in Philly, not going anywhere. They draft well. They know who they are. They have a conviction. Yeah, and to your point, man, just that physical nature, that size and strength and speed that John Schneider talked about. It was on full display, especially in the NFC game yesterday.
Let's do some Blue 88.
This is Brock and Salk's Blue 88.
Blue 88! Blue 88!
We take you to the field as Brock Heward breaks down three football questions as only he can.
Now here's your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Salk.
Brock, you weren't here early this morning when I made what I think is an important question. I asked a very important question.
You did?
Yeah. I'll ask you this before question number one.
Okay.
Is Julio Rodriguez perfect?
Oh, gosh.
Seriously.
That's one of my takeaways. I don't want to answer it now.
I don't know whether you heard him in his...
Oh, I did.
In his acceptance speech for Rookie of the Year. I think he might be perfect.
Mm-hmm.
How are he and Mahomes similar?
They're perfect because they're the antithesis of your little rant on Kittle and Kelsey. They make it about everyone else. And it's not just a... I'm sorry. It's not a Russell Wilson just mentioning you by name, right? Because Russell will mention every teammate and try to remember all of their names and even Wendy the Wendy lady. But when these guys, when Julio says, we did this, that pronoun is so very real. And he believes that. Mahomes yesterday, you could see him when he's interviewed after the game, when he's interviewed on the stage, he wants to make it about others. There is a genuine humility. And as much as these scouts this week at the Senior Bowl and over the next couple months and all the things that they look for, Mike, at that position, you want to see, athleticism. You want to see accuracy. You want to see anticipation. This being quarterback, well, center field too. You want to see all these traits, all these physical traits, man. Find poise, find genuine humility, and you find a superstar. And I think in both Julio and certainly in Mahomes, these organizations are going to build around them.
Would you put Frank Clark on that list after the game? He said, I'm the bleeping king.
I'm him.
Question number two.
You know that's what the kids are saying, right?
I do know that, yes. Yeah. Frank's out there.
Does Avery ever do that?
Cecily? Avery, yeah, she says, I am him all the time.
After the play, like, see that, Dad?
Yeah.
Did you guys have a good time in Vegas? I never even heard.
Oh, yeah, we had a great time. Okay. Yeah, we went all the way through that. Vegas, great. Could use a coat of paint in a few spots. Was kind of my big takeaway there. Brock, who was the single best player you saw on the field yesterday?
2D linemen. And you can split the baby with them. But Hassan Reddick and Chris Jones. And I'm going to say Chris Jones because he's got to do so much dirty work inside. And he played inside and he played outside. And he split double teams and he sacked Burrow multiple times. The fact that dude had not had a playoff sack, that's just the biggest anomaly. And when that man had tears in his eyes before the anthem and Titus is like, Dad, is he crying? I'm like, yeah, man. And those are not tears of sadness. That is so much emotion that is welling up in this guy right now. And kind of like the dude on Fast Times at Ridgemont High, the linebacker, Forrest Whitaker, can't block him. what was the character's name? What was his name? Do you remember?
I'm not a Fast Times guy. Sorry. Okay.
Sorry. Well, anyway, they destroyed his car. Right? He had a very fancy...
No, I remember what happened.
Camaro. And then he just took the game over. That pretty much was Chris Jones yesterday for Cincinnati. Like, just don't even try him. And then after the game was very emotional about Arrowhead and what that place means to him. And you don't diminish Arrowhead. And, yeah, Chris Jones was more than a monster.
He was pretty good yesterday. There's no doubt about that. And, yes, so was Hassan Reddick. Question number three. As we continue to look forward to the draft, Brock, quarterbacks, as always, are going to be drafted above their, where they probably should be. I know you've said a few times that the NFL is starting to figure that out. Are you sure that's going to happen this year?
Well, I think, again, based on a little copycat nature, so many OC jobs open, so many head jobs open, and teams trying to figure out, okay, how are we going to do this? Like, how are we going to close a little of the gap? We're not going to get all the way to Kansas City. We're not going to get all the way to Philly. And how do we close it down a little bit? How do we make it a little easier to run the football? It's hard to run the ball traditionally in the NFL. It just is. So how are we going to figure out a way to do it? And that is where the dual athlete, like a Jalen Hurts, just shows you that, man, the effect you have on the game, those stats don't tell the story. What was he, 15 to 25, 125 yards passing? He didn't even really start running the ball until he had to finish it. That shoulder's still barking a bit. And you could see him, kind of like Russell used to do. Remember when Russell would just wait?
Mm-hmm.
Like Braveheart, and he'd just wait. And he'd just hold it like, okay, we're going to run this zone read. And I'm going to give, and I'm going to give. But when the game is on the line, or I got to scramble, or I got to pull it and run it, put my body in a little bit of harm's way, I'm going to finish you. Finish him. And that's what he would do. And Jalen Hurts, and that's why the Will Levises that can run this kid down at Florida who can't throw it accurately. They'll throw it in the fourth row sometimes. Anthony Richardson. But his dynamic run tape, Daniel Jeremiah said, whoa. Like, this is different stuff. So I think you will see those guys, because of their just physical traits and their running ability, legit running ability, I think you'll find those guys in the first round, if not the top 15.
Except that was supposed to be Malik Willis last year.
But he's little. Malik is like 6 foot.
Okay.
These guys are 6'3", 230, right. You know, big, physical. Malik was a littler guy. Matt Corral was a littler guy. These two that check those boxes still and can throw it 80 yards and on top of it have the other physical strengths and traits, I think you'll still see them go pretty high.
All right, that is Blue 88. We do that every morning at 7:45. It's three good football questions with Brock, and we have a great time doing it and learning a little something about the game as Brock brings some expert analysis. Now, you said that we were going to be breaking news next. How does that work? A lot of people took that as a way to take a shot at me, which was great. Thank you for doing that. You put out there that we're going to be breaking news, sports news at 8 o'clock,
right.
And the most common response was, oh, Salt's leaving. Great. Thanks.
Well, I mean, Goldie was pretty good last Thursday.
So I heard, yeah.
I'm sorry.
So I heard.
You know, I mean, that's a problem.
So I heard.
When you miss days and someone like Goldie comes in.
Yeah, really it won't be happening ever again.
You'll go to Vegas on the weekends. Okay, you're not going to go midweek anymore.
No, we're just not letting Goldie come back in. Can't we find somebody worse to come in and fill in next time? Jeez, that's embarrassing.
So, yeah, we do. We have legitimate, and people are like, this is not going to be. No, this is something. This is going to be
people
newsworthy
thought, though,
in this
but
market.
But it's not as big as, like, Pete Carroll is re-signing or, you know, the Sonics are coming back or
that
anything
was number
like
two
that.
Behind you. I mean, feel good about that. Is right. You kind of cull the results there. Number two was, oh, Pete's going to retire. I knew it. I knew Pete was going to retire. So
it's not quite at that level.
Uh-huh.
And if it was, I don't think we'd have held it until the next day. So it is news. It is legitimate breaking news, but it's not at the Pete retirement type level or anything like that. And no, you jackals, I am not leaving. I am doing what I want to be doing, and I'm not going anywhere. But we do have a guest who will break some news next. Brock and Salk, Seattle Sports on 710, salesports.com.